Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, it's Joe, and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. In this show, we'll be addressing an extremely common problem most automation engineers have to deal with, and that is running cross-browser tests. They'll drive you crazy, but today you're in luck, because we'll be test-talking with Megan Lewis, a test automation engineer at Lever, and a former employee at ThoughtWorks, the same folks that gave us Selenium, gives us a sneak peek at her Selenium conference presentation called Making Cross-Browser Tests Beautiful. So if you're doing any form of cross-browser testing, especially if you have to deal with Internet Explorer, you don't want to miss this episode. Check it out. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. Hey, Megan, welcome to Test Talks.
Hi, Joe. Thank you.
It's awesome to have you on the show. Today, I'd like to talk about some of your experience with test automation, as well as your upcoming presentation, Making Cross-Browser Tests Beautiful, for the Selenium Conference. I think that's happening in the next few weeks in London. So before we get into it, though, could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. So I'm a quality engineer based out of San Francisco, California. I have been a QA now for the past 5 years or so. I started out my career working as a consultant for this company, ThoughtWorks, and kind of had a lot of great experiences with different companies, built up some really good automation experience both for mobile and desktop applications. And for the past couple of years, I have been working for startups in San Francisco. I'm currently working at a company called Lever and helping to build out the QA team there from the ground up.
I always hear a lot about ThoughtWorks. I think that's where Selenium originated. There's some new applications coming out for software development like Gage that is out of ThoughtWorks. So what was it like to work for ThoughtWorks?
It was such a great experience for me. So I was there for a little over 3 years, and the time I was there worked on probably about 8 different projects, you know, ranging kind of from a couple months up to almost a year at a time. So it was great to be able to go to a project and maybe learn a different programming language or testing tool. And then ThoughtWorks also builds their kind of own in-house tools. You mentioned Gage is one of them. There's Go, which is kind of like a CI tool. There is Twist, which is another testing framework. So I think that, you know, it's a combination of kind of the in-house tools and the consulting aspects that they offer are really great.
Very cool. So I noticed you've also worked for, you were an intern at IMS, I guess some larger companies, JP Morgan. What's your experience between working for a larger company and a smaller startup?
Oh, quite different. quite different. I think the reason that I wanted to go to kind of, you know, a startup was that there would definitely be a lot more responsibility, a lot more room to help me grow my career and kind of get really good hands-on experience with automation and even with kind of setting up infrastructure, like, because there might not be anyone to do that. So a lot of times I'm used to kind of like integrating my test with like a continuous integration server and kind of having to figure out how to do that. So I think it's a lot more versatile that I've found, whereas like, you know, kind of with a larger company, even with ThoughtWorks, you know, the processes are so established already that there is still room to make an impact. But I don't think quite as much as working at a startup where, you know, everything is very fast paced and kind of you get to make all the decisions.
Awesome. I'm a little jealous. I always work for large, large companies, but I'm just a little cog in it. So I always fantasize, I'm going to go to a startup and move to California, you know, but awesome. So it sounds like you did get into heavily into automation. Like you said, you started focusing on mobile testing. And I assume this is where your presentation came out of making cross-browser tests beautiful. So can you just give it a high-level overview of what the session is going to be about at the Selenium conference?
Sure. So this session is about my experience at the first startup I worked at. And how the decision came about that we needed cross-browser tests, basically, because that's how it kind of came about. I had built, kind of an automation suite running in Chrome, and I think that was really great at first. The team was really happy. The tests were catching issues, but customers were complaining that, like, a certain feature didn't work in Internet Explorer, or like, they couldn't, kind of see something, or like, users weren't having the same experience across all browsers, essentially. So that kind of like prompted me to think about a solution, and that's kind of where cross-browser testing came in. I already had this automation running for Chrome, so I figured it would be really, really good, and kind of like easy to have these same tests run for Internet Explorer, for Firefox, for Safari. So that's kind of how it came about. And I started building up these tests. But in doing that, I found it wasn't quite as easy as I assumed, just to be able to kind of like switch out a driver and say, hey, instead of using Chrome driver, we're going to use Firefox driver, that there were some issues along the way. And I'm kind of just talking about those kind of maybe pitfalls that people might run into that are extremely common, and kind of solutions about how to get over that and really have a really robust set of cross-browser tests.
Awesome. This is one of the reasons why I was so excited to get you on the show. My team's actually struggling with this, and I'm just curious to get your opinion. So our application only officially supports IE, but Selenium against IE is awful. But the application really is an AngularJS application. There's no reason why we can't run against another application, another browser. The only issue is we have a integration with thick client applications, so we need an ActiveX control for those types of tests, and that's why we only support IE. But what I've told the teams is, look, if it's not browser-specific, we're just testing a flow, a functionality. We're looking for a doctor. We get a doctor back. It shouldn't matter what browser we use it in. So let's use Chrome. It's more stable. It's more reliable. In your experience, why is it that these browsers are so different? And is that approach, you think, an issue? Or do you think people should be testing against all browsers and all platforms?
I'll start with the kind of the last part of the question. Do I think people should be testing on all browsers? And I guess it really depends. But I think the most important thing for me, and why kind of I wanted to do cross-browser testing in the first place, getting lots of kind of customer complaints that like this feature isn't working, or like this doesn't look right. I didn't want to have that happen anymore. I kind of really wanted a good safety net to say that, yes, I have tested, functionality across all browsers, and yes, it does work, rather than like getting complaints and I can't really answer for sure. I don't have the confidence to know whether things are actually functioning or are kind of appearing correctly. So, and in my opinion, that's why I think it's important to kind of run your test across all different browsers, or I mean, at least if they're not automated, make sure that you are doing some manual checks to kind of make sure that this core functionality is working. So I think that is why it's important to test across all browsers. And as far as why they behave differently, I think it's just kind of the way that they were created. But even talking specifically about like, using Selenium and using these different browser drivers, they just function a little bit differently. You might find that some kind of functionality that is available in one driver isn't available in another. For example, like IE driver just kind of doesn't have the maybe kind of all the same kind of set of features that Chrome driver might have. So for example, like using some native events, like when you're clicking certain elements, like IE just doesn't really interact well with certain like option tags or select tags, which are typically common when you're interacting with dropdowns, for example. So you might have to find like a different way to interact with the dropdown that, Chrome might support these native events, but just have like a little bit of difficulty doing that in IE. And I think, all of these drivers are open source. So you always kind of have the option to kind of go in and play around with them and learn more about their differences. And even kind of contribute maybe to make them more similar. But there are just some things that are a little bit tweaky. Another really good example and something that I came across in my application was when I was writing tests in Safari, I came across an issue that like Safari just doesn't allow you to upload files. Safari driver, excuse me, just doesn't allow you to upload files. So you kind of have to think about if you have an application that you need to upload files with automation, like how you can kind of get around doing that. So just slight differences that you kind of sometimes just stumble across and might not even know.
Awesome. Great advice. And I just want to focus in on, you mentioned that you found issues where your customers are complaining that something doesn't look right to them. And that's actually something that burned us, where someone was using IE9 and said, hey, this doesn't look right. But even our test wouldn't have been able to find that issue with the browser because it looks different. So how do you handle that? I know manual testing, we have exploratory testing, and all our exploratory tests are done in IE. But do you use any specific tools like Apply tools, any type of visual validation type testing you recommend?
You know, I personally don't do any kind of visual testing, but I think something like that definitely might come in handy and definitely save you a lot of time from kind of constantly doing the manual verification of those kind of visual differences. What tool I've used most commonly, especially like as I'm working in companies that basically only have MacBooks and I don't have access to IE at all, I've really come to love Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs gives you lots of great options for you know, using all these different platforms, using browsers like IE, and like kind of at hand, you have all different versions of IE, kind of going back to like maybe even IE6. Maybe you have users that are using IE6. So I think that has been a really great way for me to kind of like manually test different features across browsers and platforms.
Awesome. Love that answer. Sauce Labs is the exclusive sponsor of Test Talk. So they're going to love that. So that was totally unscripted. So thank you.
It's great.
Awesome. So do you have any tips on choosing the best locators that will work against all browsers?
Sure. So something that I found generally works the best is to use some kind of CSS selector. That kind of like will be the best representation of that kind of element. I think you can always kind of use IDs, names, classes, but something that I've tried to stick to recently is just kind of using CSS selectors. And I think in a way I was kind of forced into using CSS selectors as I transitioned to use a JavaScript testing framework. In my last project, I was using Nightwatch. And basically, like, CSS selectors are the kind of supported locators. And I think I found really great results with using that, that kind of generally work with. And I think that there are just, like, a couple problem elements, like radio buttons. I mentioned dropdowns before, checkboxes. And usually, like, if I find some kind of CSS selector that, you know, kind of is in, like, the center of the locator, those work really great.
Awesome. Now, besides locators, I know a lot of people always struggle with synchronization issues. And so, like, once again, our developers will test against Chrome, and everything runs really fast against Chrome when we run our regression test. But then you go against IE, and all of a sudden it's like, why is this failing? It was working. But it's because IE, for some reason, is slower. So any ideas or suggestions of how we can do better, you know, explicit or implicit weights, anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I've definitely experienced this before. IE drivers are just really slow. Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, I mentioned I use Sauce Labs. So like with those virtual machines, and I think because it is a virtual machine, that just kind of makes the experience even more slow. So in terms of weights, I generally try to stick to using explicit weights, and kind of that is confined to our particular web element. So you're waiting, you know, until this element is clickable, until it's visible, until it's displayed, and you can wait for that element for a certain amount of time. So maybe up until 10 seconds. And I think that's better than using an implicit wait, which kind of just waits for a certain amount of time rather than like an event to happen or an element to be located.
Awesome. So I'm just trying to picture your workflow. So when you run your regression test, then it sounds like you point to a service like Sauce Labs. And maybe do you run your whole regression against all the browsers, or do you have like a strategy in place where you just run maybe a core set of tests against all browsers?
Yeah, so we try to just stick to a core set of kind of tests that we run against all browsers. And generally, we kind of do that just like once a day. I don't think we realize that's something that we don't need to do all the time. But we have kind of varying levels. So we have like smoke tests, for example, that run after each commit to the project. And those will give us a really high level overview that, you know, the application is working as we expect. And then we also run our regression once a night.
Awesome. Yeah. I love that idea of a quality gates almost in your continuous integration environment.
Right. Yeah. And it is great. I think there are so many kind of options of how you can run your test. And that's how I found it to be valuable, to run just certain kind of fast, very valuable tests often, and just kind of stick to running other things once a night or once a day, whatever kind of the cadence is.
Cool. So what's your approach to automation? Do you try to automate everything through the UI, or when you're working with your teams, how does that work? Do you try to encourage more unit API type level tests, or what's your test mix like?
Oh, definitely. That's a great question. So are you familiar with the test pyramid?
Yes.
Okay. So I think that was something that works kind of like cemented in my head, and I will always have that idea kind of going forward. But basically, I try to just stick at, especially at the UI level, kind of just stick to the big user journeys. For example, at my last project, I was working on kind of a loan application, and kind of like the first and like most important step with that was that you can kind of submit a rate check and get rate. So that was a really, that was one user journey. And then the next kind of big part was that you can actually submit the application, and the application was going into review. So that's kind of another user journey. But generally, like, I want those kind of like big picture tests to be at that top kind of UI level. But then as much as possible, try to push more tests to the integration level that is, you know, not going through the UI typically, and even more kind of validation, and the most validation happening at the unit test level. That's very kind of specific, thinking about maybe even kind of like what each kind of function should return, or kind of specifically testing like the code and that the code works as expected. I try to push things out of the UI as much as possible.
Awesome. So I'm just curious to know also how your life as an automation engineer, how that works within your particular company now. Does everyone do automation? Or are you the only person doing automation? Or do you recommend a certain approach that agile teams may take towards automation to be successful with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another great question. So something that I'm doing at my current company is my QA team is pretty small. We're a team of two QAs for about 15 developers. And something that has been working really great for us is to pair on kind of the happy path kind of scenarios with developers as we're working on a project. And kind of like we just make sure that over each quarter that we're pairing at least once with every developer. And I think that's good. That's really great for QA, and that's great for the developers as well, because sometimes there's just way too much to do. We can't possibly be writing all the tests. So it's really important for my QA team to make sure that we are working with developers and that they are empowered to write the Selenium test as well. And so far, that's been working really great for us. And I think it's also good just in case, like maybe even, you know, for example, next month I'm going to SeleniumConf, so I might be out. I will be out, and I think my QA counterpart will be kind of out on vacation. So it's really great to know that. I think tests will still get written even though we might be away. So just kind of empowering the whole team to be able to do this is really working out.
Awesome. I think that's a great approach. Now, you mentioned earlier you were using NightWatch.js in your previous position. What makes you select a certain tool? Is it based on the technology stack that your developers are using, so that if you did leave, like you mentioned, that your developers would be able to use the same types of tools and technologies that they're already familiar with?
Yes, that definitely plays a huge part of the decision. At my last project, I was working in an Angular app, Angular and using Node for the backend. And I think that there were really only, I mean, there were just a handful of options at that point. And I think it came down to using Protractor, which is, you know, heavily tied to Angular, and then using Nightwatch, which also, is written in Node, and I think kind of would be very relatable for the developers as well. So, kind of just make a big pro and con list and kind of go from there to decide which framework to use. And I think Nightwatch just seemed really cool, so we kind of just went with it. And in that way, we're able to write tests directly in the same project, same repository as all the other code is going into, which I think is something else that is really crucial if you want your whole team to be able to write and run these tests really easily, to pick a framework that has, you know, at least the same language and that is going to be kind of, again, relatable to your team.
So in your perfect automation world, what's your favorite automation technology that you love using or language?
That's a really good question. I have to think about. At least for right now, I'm a really big fan of WebDriver.js. I think I've been kind of using or working in JavaScript shops for the past few years. So that's something that I really like right now. So I think WebDriver.js is something that's really cool. And that I'm founding to be really nice to work with right now.
Awesome. Yeah, for some reason, I'm just hearing more and more people talking about JavaScript, and JavaScript frameworks everywhere. So I think it probably makes sense that if people don't have that experience, they might definitely want to check out something like Nightwatch or WebDriver.js for sure. Is there one thing you see over and over again in your experience that most test automation engineers are doing wrong, or you think most companies just don't understand about automation?
Kind of. And this kind of relates to question that you asked a few minutes ago about kind of like how much do you decide needs to be, you know, automated at the UI level. I think that's a problem that I have seen a lot and kind of still continues to happen, is that people try to automate everything at the UI level. And I don't think that's always appropriate. These tests are the most costly in terms of, you know, time that it takes to run, and time that it takes to get feedback to your team. So I think it just keeping the idea of the test pyramid in mind, that often kind of inverts and you end up like with kind of like the ice cream cone pattern where you have all these UI tests at the top level and maybe not a lot of other, you know, integration or unit tests. And I think that can have some really bad results. I've been on projects before where I've seen the UI test take hours and hours and hours to run. And it seems like that isn't really doing anyone any good at that point. Because especially if you're having failures in these super long test runs, I think over a certain amount of time, people just get desensitized to the value of UI test in general. So I always try to really keep this idea of having kind of just the most important user journeys being automated at the UI level, and try to avoid the pattern of just like automating everything just because you can.
Love that advice. I mean, I definitely recommend that to anyone listening, that is the way to go. All right, Megan, are there any books or resources you would recommend to someone to learn more about automation?
Probably one of my most favorite books, what I have been reading recently, and I kind of always kind of find myself coming back to. I think it's called 50 Quick Ideas for Tests. No, that's not the name. I can't remember. It's 50 Quick Ideas to Improve Your Tests. And that is such a great book. And they are just kind of 50 quick ideas. Like, they're, you know, the book is, I think, a pretty easy read, but I definitely find a lot of value in kind of keeping some of these things in mind, especially as I join a new project and I'm thinking about how to, like, kind of just where to start. Like, what am I going to automate? How is that going to look like? What is my interaction with my team going to be like? How do I want to collaborate with people? How do I want to kind of make sure that I am building a really good foundation to kind of have these tests be long lasting and continue to be valuable over time. So I've learned so much great information from that book. I kind of always keep it handy.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that resource. I love the book. So I definitely agree. I love the way that book's written too. Like you said, it's small, digestible pieces, and it's really readable and it's kind of fun. So definitely agree with that. Okay, Megan, before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to improve their automation efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
Yeah, so I guess there's one thing that comes to mind. I'm currently on a project where we are currently not running our automation and continuous integration for like various reasons. And I would definitely recommend that, like, whenever possible, just run your test in CI and run them often. And make sure that you think about how to run your test from the very beginning. Otherwise, you might be in a situation where you're not running your test in CI and you're not getting that really crucial feedback that you need to get often. With, you know, kind of being able to run your test on a schedule. So that would be one piece of advice that I have. And I'm really just kind of I think the biggest point is just run your test often. Run your test often. Like, you know, you spend a lot of time writing these tests and kind of making sure that they run well. So you also just want to make sure that you're getting the most value out of them by keeping them up to date and make sure that you are constantly kind of having that safety net up to catch issues.
Thank you, Megan, for your cross-browser testing automation awesomeness. The links to everything of value we covered in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/126. And while you're there, make sure to click on the Sign Up Now free button under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. And just so you know, Automation Guild, an online conference dedicated 100% to test automation, is going to open this week. So November 1st, I'm going to open up registration for Automation Guild. We have over 25 awesome automation engineers that are going to share their thoughts and insights, share their screens, best practices, and tips to creating automation awesomeness. If you want to start off right in 2017, you don't want to miss the Automation Guild. So head on over to automationguild.com to learn more information. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with creating automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.